Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'd like to reflect with you about my new book, Universal Love, Surrendering to the God of Peace, which just came out from Orbis Books. This is the first episode of two podcasts, which are a project of BeatitudeCenter.org, where you can find about many other podcasts and Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus and practicing nonviolence and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. So let's begin with a little prayer. So I invite you, wherever you are, just to take a deep breath and to relax and to recenter yourself. And together, let's enter into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely and personally and everyone everywhere. And we welcome the risen nonviolent Jesus here with us. And just take a moment to ask for whatever graces you need to follow the nonviolent Jesus more faithfully and do God's will. God of peace, thank you for all the blessings of life, love, and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus, to surrender our hearts and our lives and our will to you, and to work for a more nonviolent, more just world. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, strengthen us, and send us out to do only your will, to welcome your reign of peace and love, to do our part then in your will to help end poverty, racism, greed, injustice, fascism, war, nuclear weapons, and environmental destruction, that we might be your holy peacemakers and welcome your reign of universal love and peace on earth. In Jesus' name, amen. So thank you all for joining me. As I said, this is part one of a two-part podcast on my new book called Universal Love, Surrendering to the God of Peace, which is just out from Orbis Books. I want to talk a little bit first about how the book happened, and then I'll go through some of the themes of the book. It came about at the beginning of the pandemic when I had just moved to California and was living, and I'm living here as a priest in residence in the Diocese of Monterey. And I was living alone in a cabin with a black and white cat on a 1,000-acre ranch right on the Pacific Ocean, just south of Big Sur, California. It was spectacular. And I had to bring in water and wood for the stove and was writing. And I had just published a collection of meditations on the Psalms called Praise Be Peace, Psalms of Peace and Nonviolence in a Time of War and Climate Change, which I hope everyone will get. And I was about to go on a 30-city book tour when the pandemic struck, and everything was canceled within an hour. So I decided to try to use the time for more prayer, reflection, and long walks along the coast. Like everybody, I didn't know how long this was going to last. And I threw myself into writing what became my life's work, my last book called The Gospel of Peace, a commentary on Matthew, Mark, and Luke from the perspective of nonviolence, which is a mammoth study of the Synoptic Gospels, line by line, as if Gandhi and Dr. King were pointing out each instance of Jesus' spectacular nonviolence. I also decided to join the local gym and take exercising classes. And so the pandemic is underway, and one day the young kid who was the class instructor, I call him Will in the book, came up to me and asked me, he had looked me up on the internet, if I would be his spiritual director. Now, I've been a spiritual director for many, many people throughout my life, nonstop since 1983, when I first took a course in spiritual direction. I've never not been a spiritual director, actually, when I think about it. And I've had my own spiritual director since 1980. And I came to the conclusion over time that a spiritual director is someone you meet with about once a month to discuss the presence of God in your life and how God might be trying to guide you. So it's not a therapist or a counselor. I think it's like having a spiritual coach who keeps asking you, where is God in your life? What is God saying to you? And as you slowly begin to hear the question and answer the question, the director, me, I point out how the person is evading and resisting God. We don't even realize how we do it. And then I, the coach, urge the person to go back to God and be with God and do God's will. And actually, after that kind of conversation, you feel really excited and you want to go back to God. So in other words, a spiritual director for me is someone who tries to get you into spiritual shape. And that's how I started talking with young Will. And we were having these conversations, and he tells me he wanted to be a journalist in college, and he liked to write, and we were in lockdown, and we were becoming friends, and everything is closed. We started to do timed writing sessions along the lines of my friend Natalie Goldberg and her book, Writing Down the Bones, in conjunction with our spiritual conversations, and we would do this regularly at the few coffee shops that were open. Well, I didn't know any of this, but between our conversations, our writing practice, my intense study of nonviolence and the Gospels, and the solitude of lockdown cabin life, I began to feel drawn deeper into a new understanding of the spiritual life as total surrender to the God of peace. And that's what my new book is about. So the book is in three parts. The first part is on the first basic themes of meditation, living in relationship with God, surrendering to God, letting go of control, and trying, learning, begging to do only God's will, not our will. And then Archbishop Tutu's great lesson to me about free will. The second part of the book is about the connection between surrendering ourselves to God and living nonviolence. So how, if you're surrendering to God, that means you're practicing to be more nonviolent every single day for the rest of our lives. The third part, which I thought was the point of the book, which I think is original, is that there are social and political implications of surrendering our lives to God and doing God's will. And that's what these mystics don't say. In other words, that doing God's will leads to selfless service toward humanity. And in a world of, let's say, nuclear weapons and catastrophic climate change and permanent warfare and extreme poverty, it leads to full-time nonviolent resistance to systemic violence, injustice, and fascism. So that we become, as Pope Leo said a few months ago, like Jesus, quote, unarmed and disarming, which is a beautiful phrase. So all the meditations in the book are actually based on real conversations between me and Will. So it's an unusual book. It's very conversational. And it begins like this. We sit down to talk and I say, okay, Will, so you believe in God? And he goes, no. oh, okay, I say. Well, what do you believe in? And only later did I realize that was really helpful. And he started talking about, I believe in truth, I believe in love, I believe in compassion. I said, well, I do too. That works for me. But he didn't want to use the word God, which was fine with me because I get it, especially for young people. But he wants to learn how to meditate, he said, because he took a class in college on world religions with this brilliant professor, and he realized that meditation was a key part of the life's of the greatest people who ever lived. So he wants to practice meditation as part of his life. So I say to him, okay, great. Well, if you want to enter into the spiritual life and learn about meditation, here's what you do. I want you, this is what I said to him, I think, in the first meeting. I want you to go and spend 30 minutes in silence every day and ask God to be with you. Now, he had said he didn't want me to use the word God, so I said, well, how about we call God universal love? He said, oh, that's good. Okay, so go and ask universal love to be with you and speak to you. That's what I do. And I was saying to him, instead of talking about God or universal love or the spiritual life or you're going to have a spiritual experience, go and be with universal love and then report back to me. So he said, oh, okay, I'll do that. A week later, he comes over to visit, and he says to me, he'd been sitting in silent meditation for 30 minutes every day and focusing on his breath so that he had learned to become very still, and he's breathing consciously, and he's saying, as I had taught him, okay, universal love, if you would like to say anything, I'm here to listen. I want to be open to you. And one day he's overwhelmed with a sense of infinite unconditional love, which brings peace and joy that he had never known before. And he felt he was in the presence of universal love, capitalized, and that he was infinitely loved. And he starts telling me this, and he burst into tears, sobbing. Well, it's not something I'd ever heard before, you know, God as universal love. And he says, I've been told I was created to be an extension of universal love. And I was acting like the wise spiritual guru and said, very good. But inside I was going, wow, an extension of universal love. So that's what set off years of our conversations. And with the writing practice, I started writing about these themes, not knowing I was writing a book. So we talked about this question, which I invite, of course, all of this is to invite all of us to think of. How we might all become extensions of universal love. And I think that means starting our day in quiet meditation to open our hearts and minds and spirits to the God who is universal love, universal compassion, universal peace, the God who dwells within us and works within us. And this is the daily practice that I propose we begin to live out, that we might become universal love more and more in thought, word, and deed. And that over time, if we can consciously center ourselves in God's universal love and peace, well, we will grow in empathy and compassion for every human being, for all creation. And so the journey is a journey of nonviolence and compassion, which is deeply rooted in the universal love of God. And so life becomes an adventure in universal love, compassion, and peace. And all of this is a way to talk about the life of nonviolence that Gandhi and King calls us to. So that's where I get through in the book. And I'd like to walk through a few themes with you, which is what I did with Young Will, beginning with meditation. So if we begin each day in quiet meditation with universal love, I was saying to him, and this is what I've tried to do for 50 years now, then we can return to that experience of unconditional love and be filled with God's love throughout our day, and we can enjoy it, and we get to know God who actually loves us and likes us and sit with that God and give our days to God, and over time, give our lives to God. And that love, that relationship becomes our lives, our ordinary day-to-day, the place where we live and move and have our being that our days flow out of. And over time, and I think this is really important, in this spiritual practice, which I hope everybody knows, I'm not saying anything really new here, we let go of our false images of God as a punitive, vindictive, punishing deity who's eager to throw all of us into hell, or at least, let's hope, some of them. And instead, to our surprise, we meet the living God, universal love, who loves us and everyone unconditionally, who's actually interested in us, who likes us and likes being with us. This is very, very different. We can barely grasp what this God, living God, is like. So we begin to move beyond our childish image of God, what my friend Greg Boyle calls our puny God, into the mystery of God as capital letters, universal love, universal compassion, universal peace, and daily meditation. Dwelling with consciously, fully awake, universal love can open up a space for us you know, to live our day. And that's why I was trying to teach young Will that we need to have a formal check-in time with this God every single day. That's what I'm trying to get at. That's what I was trying to teach him. You can't just do this once in a while. You need to have, if it's a relationship with universal love, you need to check in every day with this most important relationship in your life. So one day, Will comes to me and says, wow, whenever I meditate in the morning, my whole day feels better. But then I notice when I forget to meditate, I'm not myself. And if something goes wrong or someone says something hurtful to me or I don't like, I'm suddenly ready to snap back at that person. But when I meditate in the morning, I'm pretty much more present, more centered, and a little more thoughtful during the rest of the day. And so I'm less ready to snap at someone, and I'm more present and more mindful and more compassionate toward others. And I said, well, I think that's how the spiritual life works and how the way of peace works. And maybe what the path to becoming an extension of universal love. So the key here is entering and living in an intimate relationship with God as you understand God, in your case, as universal love. And once we understand that we are in a relationship with God that will never end, go ever deeper into intimacy with universal love, then this is not a chore or a duty or an obligation. We enjoy meditation. That's one thing that I heard Thich Nhat Hanh tell me a lot, and he lamented that people didn't understand how enjoyable it was to sit down in meditation. It becomes the one place where we're truly safe and secure, where we can be free and whole. I mean, we just are full of gratitude for all our blessings, and we feel renewed and empowered to go forward with energy and hope in this spirit of universal love, out into the public, into the world, into the mess. This has been my experience in the best and the worst of times for my whole life. And I think gradually, this is something that I've been talking about with Will for 6 years now, we learn not to seek the feelings of bliss, you know, the feeling of being loved. We don't need that anymore. But we're becoming mature human beings in relationship with God. We enjoy just sitting with God and trusting that we're with God. We become accustomed to dwelling together in peace, in the intimate silence with universal love. Now, the key to all of this, I was learning, I told Will, and I've been learning the hard way all my life, is total surrender to God. And that's what this book is about. And it was never my intention to write a book like this, but I'm going to get to the point of why I did. And it has to, I blame it all on Archbishop Desmond Tutu. God never coerces us, but gives each, every human being on the planet, whoever lived, complete free will. This is just where God is God. God allows us to make our own choices. And because God is totally nonviolent and infinitely loving, this is really important, God cannot force us to love God or do what God wants. That's the whole ballgame in that sentence right there. And finally, it took Desmond Tutu to really get through that through my thick skull. God gives us freedom to choose God's will or not. And so we all run away and do what we want and reject God's will. And we've grown so used to being in control of our own lives and the day-to-day and doing what we want that our limited selfish self-wills end up ruining our lives. We think we know better than God. That's because we're just so afraid, of course. Our self-will serves only our ego, our pride, our honor. It wants comfort, pleasure, riches, and power. This is all about power. Even though none of these things bring lasting peace or happiness or serve God, much less open us into the universal love of God. So the more we want for ourselves, the more we're going to struggle every day to gain control and get what we want, and we can't get it, so we keep trying to get it, and it's going to cause us a lot of pain and suffering, and then we're going to leave a trail of wreckage, and then we end up as a human race on the brink of nuclear destruction, catastrophic climate change, permanent warfare, devastating poverty. So self, this is how I see it. Our will, self-will, human will, always obsesses over itself and can't give any other room to others, and certainly not God. So what Tutu was trying to show me, I went to him to talk about peace and justice, and he's saying we deliberately, consciously turn away from God, especially people who think they're living godly lives. And in doing so, we sever our ties to universal love and peace. Our problems, difficulties, and crises arise because of our own selfish self-will. And then we blame God, and we resent God, you know, like a kindergartner, for not being there for us when we were trying to do our will. Even though we long ago were the ones who rejected God and are not there for God. And of course, we resent anyone who does seem to do God's will and invite us to a more godly, spiritual, peace-filled life of universal love and nonviolence. And so we keep falling downward more and more and deeper into the darkness of our own selfishness and inner violence. And our selfishness, self-will, leads us to reject the loving and wise will of God, and we really enter into a peacelessness, which leads to violence, which is just death. We're talking about death as a social methodology, as Dan always said it to me. So here's my thesis. The secret to the life of peace, the life of God, the life of universal love, is to renounce our self-will and surrender our self-will completely and all our lives entirely to the God of universal love and peace. Every moment, every day, from now on. And that's what I talked about with Young Will, and that's what I tried to write about in the book as I was studying the Gospels and thinking about this conversation I had with Tutu. If we want to be extensions of universal love, I suggest we have to surrender our will over and over to universal love. And we have to allow ourselves to be transformed into extensions of universal love so that our lives are no longer our own. We belong completely to God. Our day-to-day is run by God. And now we want only to do God's will, which is universal love, universal compassion, universal peace, which Gandhi and King insist, and so does Jesus, means universal nonviolence, total nonviolence. It's all so clear to me now. Some people fight God their whole lives and never know peace and never surrender until their last breath. And they live in misery because they're never satisfied, never peaceful, never present, always trying to be in control and doing a lot of harm, hurting everyone in their path and unconsciously leaving a trail of wreckage. And everybody becomes a victim of their peacelessness. And I think that's one way to, I mean, the old days, they called that original sin. We all do this to varying degrees. But the gospel invites us to total surrender of ourselves to God of universal love and peace, to let God's universal love and peace flow through us freely. And in the process, to do only God's will every day. And what's so strange is that apparently, oddly enough, we become much happier and peaceful and kind of helpful to others. That's a great mystery. You'd think, hey, if God only did things my way, I'd be a lot, you know, we'd all be happier. No, when we do things God's ways, each one of us is much happier, and everybody's happier and more peaceful, and the world would be so much better. Our ongoing surrender to God allows God to enter us, take over our lives, solve our problems, heal our relationships, and then use us to serve humanity and creation. This was always God's plan, to use us, if we're willing, to draw us and everyone into God's universal love and universal peace, and through us to spread God's universal love and peace far and wide. Now, sooner or later, whether it's today or our last day, our last hour, we will discover the freedom and peace of total surrender to God. This is what I was telling young Will. And I said, "We'll wish we had done it long ago." And that's what I was encouraging him to do. The sooner we surrender everything to God, the better everything will be, starting within us and around us. And that's how I encouraged him to practice his spiritual day-to-day living so that he would live his way into being an extension of universal love. Now, when I look at the nonviolent Jesus, which is what I was studying when I was writing this, I see that he surrendered every moment of his life to God over and over again. He could walk into the world and proclaim God's reign of universal love, peace, and nonviolence come what may, because he was totally surrendered to God. And he's showing us what living in God looks like through this steadfast universal love, compassion, and peace. Even then, turning to Jerusalem and marching into the temple where he confronts the religious authorities who are working with the empire to rob all the poor people of their money in the name of God, and they arrest him and execute him. And he goes to his death, total nonviolence. He is the fullest extension of universal love and peace and nonviolence. So there are these teachings I was discovering as I was going through the Gospels line by line. Anyone who does the will of God is my mother, my brother, and my sister. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he's about to be arrested. And what's his prayer? His one single prayer. Not my will, your will be done. Not my will, your will be done. Not my will, your will be done. And that's at the heart of the Sermon on the Mount. And then you see it's all through the gospel. If you begin to read the gospel from the perspective of nonviolence to surrender. Your kingdom come. Your kingdom of peace, love, justice, and nonviolence come. Your will of peace, love, and nonviolence be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's what we're supposed to be praying. Jesus could endure torture and execution and remain totally nonviolent and forgiving unto death because he had already completely surrendered himself to God. This is very deep, deep waters. His last whispered words were stunning, consistent surrender to God. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Into your hands I commend my spirit. And that's kind of the way we're to live every single day of our lives, living in that sentence, especially as people who care about justice and disarmament and creation. If we want to practice nonviolence, we have to do this. So notice he's not debating my will versus God's will. He spends his entire life only doing God's will, not his will, and that's the challenge for us. And that's why that statement in John's gospel written years after the synoptics is so important, where he says, I mean, the writers are trying to bring this teaching to us. Jesus says, I can do nothing on my own, but only what I see God doing and what God tells me to do. In other words, I'm not in control of my life. I've surrendered my life completely to God. I'm only doing God's will. But when I surrender myself completely and do only God's will, then anything is possible. And that's what we're called to do. He does that, and hell is breaking loose around him. And he's completely surrendered to God and transforming anyone open to that. He's showing us how to live and love and be compassionate and to be nonviolent. The invitation is to take up his same attitude. And all of this, by the way, this talk is reflecting on how to grow deeper into the nonviolence of Jesus. And what I'm trying to propose here is that this way of total surrender is a key ingredient that we haven't discussed that much. We can't do anything on our own. But if we surrender ourselves completely to God, God can then take us and use us and lead us and work miracles through us, and our lives will be infinitely better and more meaningful, and all will be fruitful. Everything will bear good fruit. But we're not in charge of it, and we're not in control of it, and we may not live to see any of it, and all of that's just fine because our lives are long ago surrendered to God. As we become more and more surrendered to God, we become extensions of universal love, universal peace, universal nonviolence. So I'm laughing to myself because I'm so full of myself, as my friends know, and I'm talking about all of this, and I am teaching this to the young kid, you know. And I go up to see my spiritual director, who's a monk up at the monastery in Big Sur, and we're walking out in the grounds, and I'm explaining this to him. Somebody has to teach the monks. And I think this is the ultimate prayer, I say. I figured it out. This is the prayer every human being should be saying over and over throughout the day. Not my will, but your will be done. That's our mantra. So we're walking up by the cliffs overlooking the ocean. And I'm, you know, explaining all this to the monk. And he doesn't even lift his head, and he says quietly as he's walking along, "Well, I say that prayer 1,000 times a day." Oh. boy. This is what I was teaching young Will, and what I started to really focus on, and what I'm working on these days. I remember once I texted Will and said, "The more you surrender to God, the less you have to struggle over anything." And he texted right back and said, "That's a game changer." And I said, "Everything becomes easier because it's now in God's hands, the hands of universal love." Why? So it's easy to live the Sermon on the Mount. We don't have to worry. We don't have to be anxious. We don't have to be afraid. We don't have to judge people. We don't have to be angry even. We don't have to be resentful. We don't have to have any hate. Everything we can let go. And maybe, by the way, we'll be more useful and helpful to the others around us. So this is what the first part of my book, Universal Love, is all about. It explores these themes of surrender, prayer, and becoming extensions of universal love. And I'd like to end this first podcast, which is a two-part podcast, by sharing about my conversation with Archbishop Desmond Tutu when I visited him after a month of traveling through South Africa with some close friends of mine. I think it was in January 2016. And I get there to see him. Now, we'd been friends for many, many years. And we emailed almost every other week for almost decades. This was his doing. He asked me to be what he called his pen pal, and we worked on several projects together. And so I knew he was older and had cancer, and I organized a trip with my friends to South Africa specifically to see him. And I get there, and we had mass, and he surprised me by he catered a large luncheon for me. And it was just magical. And then he says, "Okay, come over." And we went off to a corner and we sat and talked for several hours, him and me, and we were drinking coffee. And he's sitting there and I'm just over the moon to be with him. And he says, "I'm so glad I'm not God." And I'm like, "Huh?" I have no idea why he's saying this or the wisdom he's trying to share with me. Now I see Tutu as my guru, my spiritual director, my teacher, my friend. And he says, I know this because I took very detailed notes as soon as I left. Quote, "Think of the patience of God waiting for us to get it, waiting for us to organize movements for justice and peace." He's really talking to me. There's more I could tell you, but you wouldn't believe it. "So few people," he says, "see that we're all sisters and brothers of one another." I'll never forget him saying that. And now his hands are out and they don't get it, John. Imagine what God went through during the Holocaust. And now he starts looking off into the distance, waiting while some of his children kill his other children and there's nothing he could do about it. you know, I've gone all the way around the world to see him, and this is, he prepared. This is what he wanted to say to me. God is omnipotent and omnipresent, but he has decided to gift us with the gift of total freedom, to give us total free will, to let us choose between love and goodness or evil and hate and death. And because God gives us this gift of complete freedom, the gift of free will, God cannot intervene. And God cannot and will not stop us when we hurt others or wage war or commit genocide or actively work to blow up and destroy all of creation. So this is what Tutu said to me. This omnipotent God is completely weak and powerless before the evil we do. This is the God we have, he said. And he's very weak. And so, John, I'm so glad I'm not God and that God is God. And I was just utterly astounded and flabbergasted. I hadn't expected any of this. And he's launched into this very profound reflection about the mystery of God and free will. Although this has always been my experience of being with the really great people. And he starts to cry. And now he's sobbing and he's falling into my arms and he's saying, our sisters and brothers are dying and suffering all around the world. And we're all rejecting God's will. So you and I have to keep working for peace and justice till we die. And then he says, you know, kind of brushing himself off, so I'm off to Iran tomorrow morning. Well, I nearly fell off my chair when he said that. Because he was very elderly. He was really sick with cancer. And he was getting death threats from the ANC because he was denouncing publicly the corruption of the ANC, if you know about South Africa. I was utterly stunned because flying off to Iran is no joke. So I say, how do you keep going? And he says, my favorite prophet is Jeremiah. And of course, he's lost me right there. And he goes, do you know why? And I go, no. And he goes, because he cries a lot. And he bursts into tears and he's whispering to me. And I cry a lot too, John. I've cried and he's trying to pull himself together and he's really confiding in me. And he says, I have cried every single day of my life. But think how much God cries. We have a God who weeps. God weeps because we don't get it. Because we don't understand that we're all sisters and brothers of one another. And because God is here to serve us and give us this incredible reign of universal love, compassion, and peace. But we've all rejected that. We do our will, not God's will. So I cry a lot. And then he kind of pulls himself together and says, but I also laugh a lot. And he went on to detail about this. He said since he was five, he'd cried every day and laughed every day since he was five. And then he bursts into laughter and starts making fun of me, which I thought was a little over the line, Archbishop Tutu. And he kept teasing me, and he's really making fun of me, and he's bringing his friends over there, like he's really kidding me, like, why are you hanging out with this guy? Why do I hang out with this guy? He's just a big kid. He says, you know, I always think so highly of you, but now that I'm seeing here, you're just a big baby. I don't know why I hang out with you. And all my friends are now hysterically laughing, and he's laughing so hard, and I'm going, well, I don't think it's that funny. And he was so much fun, and we all had the best time. And as we were leaving, he's going, never give up, John, never give up. You and I have to work for peace and justice till the day we die. We just give ourselves completely to God and God's will. I'm sharing this story with you because this is the story, one of many, that I shared with young Will. Because this is what my teacher and spiritual guide shared with me. Archbishop Tutu exemplified for me how to surrender our wills and our entire lives to God, to universal love and peace, and what that looks like over time as we become more and more full-on extensions of universal love and peace. Desmond's life was not his own. It belonged entirely to God. He was always at the surface of humanity, creation, justice, and peace, as well as his family and all those he encountered along the way. But what I've not been able to explain to people, to activists around the country, is he learned a way to move way beyond anger, fear, and despair, which is right there in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus instructs us to avoid anger, fear, and despair, and worry, and concern, and judgment, and so forth, but to cultivate grief and joy, to cry and to laugh. As we work for justice and peace, we grieve the world's insane violence and the insanity that's happening in our country and the world these days. And we go forward and take public nonviolent action to stop it. And along the way, we enjoy the fullness of life and joy and wonder and celebration with our relationships with one another and all of creation. Even when we get persecuted, as Jesus teaches, we rejoice. And that's what I was encouraging young Will to do on his journey into becoming an extension of universal love. So this, in part two of this reflection on my new book, Universal Love, I'll walk through the rest of the book where I talk about the connection between our surrender to God and nonviolence, and then the shocking political consequences of surrendering our lives and our wills to God. I invite all those who are listening, please, to order the book and get it. It's called Universal Love. You can get it at orbisbooks.com or wherever you get books. And please join me, if you can, by helping to promote the book on social media or writing a review on Amazon or telling your friends about it or giving copies of it to priests and ministers. Thank you for listening to the Nonviolent Jesus podcast. You can hear many more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at beatitudecenter.org. And there I offer a donation to support this free work, and also sign up to receive our free e-blast with news about other upcoming podcasts and Zooms. And thanks for leaving some positive feedback or a review at NCR or whatever platform you use. But please spread the word by telling your friends about this podcast and my book. And in light of what I've been reflecting, may the God of peace bless you all. Keep on following the nonviolent Jesus. And more, let us all surrender ourselves completely to God and go forward and stand up and nonviolently resist war, injustice, and fascism, and become who we were created to be, like young Will, extensions of universal love. See you next time.